Howard, money advice you can depend on. Weekdays with Clark Howard and Dave Ramsey. And midday every Sunday with Elise Glick on AM 750. And now, 95.5 FM, News Talk WSB.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Elise Glink. This is the Elise Glink Show, live on Sundays. Normally 11 to 1, but it's still football time, so we're 12 to 2, and it is 12:06 today. So glad you could join us today. Online all the time, the website thinkglink.com, thinkglink.com. Don't forget to sign up for the free weekly newsletter. This week we are announcing the launch of one of our clients' new books. It's a novel. It'll be a great Christmas gift. It's called Oxford Messed Up. It'll be on sale at Amazon starting on Thursday. You can get a hardcover copy, a paperback copy, or just an electronic copy to suit all of your needs. So we're very proud of it. Comes out on Thursday. It's called Oxford Messed Up, and it's a love story. Okay, a very exciting day today, 404-872-0750. If you have a tax question, the lines are wide open, and you are going to want to call now because we have our favorite tax friends, Mary Brody and Bill Nemeth. They're both enrolled agents. Mary's with Jackson Hewitt. She has a Jackson Hewitt franchise. Bill works there, too, I think. They are in the studio with us today. It's the countdown to the end of the year. We always do a couple of tax shows. This year should be no different than any other. I think we're now in our maybe 9th or 10th year. I think we're in our 10th year, actually. And we've had these guys on for a long time. If you've come to any of my annual events that we do, you've seen them there talking about tax, and that's what we're going to do today. So, Elise's annual tax show with Bill and Mary, 404-872-0750. If you've got tax questions, year-end tax questions, April 15th tax questions, or just something that's been niggling at you, oh, these lows since the last April 15th. Give us a call now. Bill and Mary, welcome back.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Good to be here.
It's so good to have you. So we are well into November. Hard to believe that we've got just about 6 weeks left of the year. That seems crazy. That means Thanksgiving's like 15 days, not even 10 days away. Christmas is, what, 5 weeks away? Ooh, end of the year, coming up quickly. And so, of course, tax issues are on everybody's mind. I know I'm thinking about them. How can you not? We've got a presidential election cycle going on and people screaming all kinds of flat tax stuff at us. Tax change, abolish the IRS. It just makes me nervous. So let's start out by talking about what has changed this year and what people need to be thinking about as we approach the end of the year.
Well, terrific. I may be wrong, but I think so far for 2011, Congress has not passed any major tax legislation, which, if you look back in history the last 10 years, I think it's been two or three major tax acts every year for the last 10. And so we're looking at possibly nothing much changing except for those things that they put into place when they left office, you know, the last time. So probably the biggest, and probably the biggest one that we want to make sure everybody understands, is that the extra tax credit called the Making Work Pay Credit, it goes away. And that's $400 or $800 for married filing joint. And that means that if you had a refund less than $800 last year for a married couple, you may be looking at owing taxes this year if you haven't done any pre-planning.
So what had people qualify? How did you qualify for the Making Work Pay Credit?
Well, first of all, you had to be working, mm-hmm. and if your income wasn't too high, you got up to a $400 credit for singles or an $800 credit for a married couple. And this was just a flat-out tax credit, dollar-for-dollar write-off of your taxes. And I saw a number of returns this year that the only reason they got a refund was because of the Making Work Pay Credit. And I tried to warn everybody that's not going to be here for 2011.
So just another one-time credit. It was a part of the stimulus package. Obviously didn't stimulate all that much,
mm-hmm.
And that's going away. Okay,
right.
We also had a bunch of things pass at the end of last year that carry right through to 2012. Are any, so then those things have changed. I know that December 31st of 2012, so we have another year left on things like the estate tax and where we ended up. What about state stuff?
Georgia?
State has been relatively quiet. They traditionally follow the IRS, and they broke from their session in April, so they're not in session, so we don't expect any major tax activity until January, and they always have the option of doing it retroactively, which they have done in the past.
But you're not really expecting much.
Nathan Deal is paying back his supporters, so we'll see how that translates in the legislature.
Okay. You never know, do you?
Nope.
Well, in a presidential election year, and I remember back when we had the last presidential election cycle, all kinds of crazy things happened in January and February, and it got very, very complicated for April, so we'll just have to see how it goes. Well, let's talk to some of our listeners who have a bunch, as expected, a bunch of questions. If you have questions for Bill and Mary, they're enrolled agents. It means they're licensed to represent taxpayers before the IRS. They do about 10,000 tax returns a year. That's actually, is that fair, Bill? Is it 10,000 just for you and Mary, or do you share that with some of your employees?
Yeah, we do share.
Okay. But they see a lot of tax returns. 404-872-0750. Alan joins us on the line from Atlanta. Hey, Alan, welcome to the Tax Show.
Hey, thanks, and thanks for taking my call. Thanks for the service that you guys provide. It's just awesome.
Sure. What's your question?
My question revolves around donating to a charitable LLC. Are there limitations involved with that, from the donator's side, if you will? You know, are there any limitations by which, if they donate $1,000, or let's think big and say they donate $100,000, if they have that capability, is there a difference for them tax-wise?
It turns out that there is a limitation of half of your adjusted gross income can be donated to charity, and we're assuming then that your LLC has gone through all the hoops from the IRS point of view to be considered a charity in that regard. And let's assume you went big and you donated $100,000 and your AGI was $70,000. $30,000 is going to carry over to the next year.
And just as a point of clarification, AGI is your adjusted gross income. So that's kind of the addition of all of your income for the year.
Right. Okay.
So it doesn't translate into a loss, does it, Bill? I mean, there is not treated as an expense. It's a donation.
It is a donation, and you get the full benefit. You just may not get it all in the year you donate it, depending on your income.
Alan, did that help?
It did. And if I may, there's a small follow-up question as well. The difference between a charitable LLC and a nonprofit, is that too generic of a question to ask, or is that something you can address?
Well, when you first said charitable LLC, it occurred to me that to be a qualified donation, that company or that entity has to show up on the IRS list of eligible qualified charitable organizations. So
right.
Just because somebody says, oh, I'm nonprofit and oh, I'm an LLC, that doesn't on its surface qualify you as a registered charity that you can take the deduction for.
I see. So it would benefit those donating to double check and make sure, of course, that all of the parameters are in line and go from there.
That's right. And you can just go to the IRS website, www.irs.gov, and they do have a complete list there.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thanks for calling, Alan. We appreciate it. You know, Bill and Mary, something that occurred to me is this is probably a great time to start checking ahead if you're a company owner, like Alan is, checking ahead to your 1099s and making sure the tax information is correct. So our payroll company, SurePayroll, does this automatically, and we got a call from them that three of the people that we pay as 1099s, they had switched in the year from like their personal name to an LLC, but had given, because of the way that you have to input the name, we kind of broke it up thinking like half the name was on the first line and half the name is on the second line. And we got a call saying, this doesn't work right with the IRS. And so we had to re-enter their name on one line. It was obviously they pay their taxes, but it just didn't register right with how these companies go through the IRS. Is this a good thing to check now that we're still in November and not, say, December 31st?
Absolutely. We occasionally, when people change jobs, we'll happen to look at their W-2 and we'll see that somehow their social got mistranscribed as they went through the process of changing. So we advocate everybody look at their pay stubs just to verify all the information. And it's a great thing to keep a copy of that last one of the year, because it pretty much is a guideline as to how to interpret some of the information that's not readily apparent.
Sounds like a plan. 16 minutes past the hour, Ben joins us on the line from Kennesaw. Hey, Ben, what's your tax question?
Hey, I'm in the United States Marine Corps, and last year I tried filing my taxes. I filed successfully, but I didn't see my refund when I thought I would. So I filed with H&R Block. I contacted them, and they said they had no idea what was going on with my refund. Those, you know, out of their hand. I continued to contact the IRS, and they said that I was the victim of identity theft.
Ooh.
And that my records were being researched for identity theft reasons and everything like that. I didn't end up seeing my tax returns until this last August, so it took several months for me to get my refunds back into my bank account. My question is, throughout the process, is very irritating, is very frustrating to try to get in touch with the IRS and try to figure out what's going on. I still don't know exactly why I was being investigated. So is there a way to mitigate kind of the holding on phone lines? And is there a way, do I not have the right to know what's going on with my information?
There are a couple of really interesting questions here, Ben, and I'm so glad you called in. Bill and Mary, where do you want to jump in?
Well, it's awkward when it occurs, and as Ben is saying, it's exceptionally frustrating. Every time he calls, he may get a different assister. He will get a different bit of information. The watchdog of the IRS just published a report on how the IRS handles identity theft, and currently they gave the IRS exceptionally low grades for doing what they're supposed to be doing. So the IRS has got a long way to go. If you look back in history, until 2 years ago, the IRS said they had no purview to do anything about identity theft. And so they're slowly changing from they have no responsibility to they are starting to move forward proactively. Ben, if the system works like it should get a special PIN number when he files his 2011 so that the IRS will accept his return as the valid return, and whoever has stolen his identity information will then be rejected, and perhaps the IRS will send that person a letter or pay them a visit.
A couple of things, Ben, occur to me as well. First of all, did you put some sort of freeze on your credit report? Did you go into your credit history and take a look and see if any kinds of signs of identity theft had shown up?
I did. I went and got a credit report, and everything looked fine from, you know, what was in my bank account to my credit report to the lines credit I had out. So that's why it was really frustrating, is I had no idea why I was being investigated in the first place.
So it's interesting because a lot of times what happens, not a lot of times, and you mentioned that you were a client of H&R Block, all of the big tax companies have had situations where internal identity theft has occurred, where some sort of wayward filer decides to cut a little private deal on the side, and they basically steal identity, they steal Social Security numbers, and then they file ahead, and those people end up getting extra benefits. So did you go follow the food chain up at the H&R Block that you went to reassure yourself that that is not where anything bad happened?
I mean, I went back to the H&R Block, and I talked to the actual person that filed my returns. They couldn't answer my questions, so I talked to the manager of the branch, and they also said that, you know, with it being in the IRS's hands, they really couldn't.
Okay, that's unacceptable. So what I would have counseled you if you'd called when this happened would be to go to headquarters of H&R Block and file a complaint with them. The other thing that, as a member of the U.S. Marine Corps, you have access to Special Military Financial Assistance, and they have been known at times to get tough on identity theft of our armed forces, and thank you so much for your service. And I would encourage you to go there as well. I think to play it safe, I would probably change tax preparers this year. And if you can file online, I would. Bill and Mary, what do you think?
Just one comment I would suggest that you do this even now is head on over to an enrolled agent's office. We have the ability with e-services to go online and pull down all the transcripts of your wage and income and your account. and can tell you in real time what is actually on record with the IRS. Now, you could also, if you don't want to get it in real time, you can call up the IRS and order these transcripts, and it gives you a little bit of an idea of what's going on other than what, you know, you don't have any idea. I certainly would do that, and I would petition the IRS for that special PIN. And that goes with your name as an electronic signature, and that should protect you from someone using your ID again.
Ben, those sounds like great ideas. If you want to contact an enrolled agent, I think the email, the website is 4, GAEA.org, and we'll tell you a little bit later in the show how you can reach Bill and Mary as well. I'm Elise Glenk. This is our tax show, 404-872-0750. We'll be right back with more on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkglenk.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
WSB. We have our tax show today. Call in with your questions, 404-872-0750. Mary Brody, Bill Nemeth, they are enrolled agents. They're here to answer your questions. You can reach Mary at her office, 770-446-8545. Bill prefers that you call him on his cell phone. Wow, 770-616-1638. If you're looking for an enrolled agent in Georgia, go to the Georgia Association of Enrolled Agents, the number 4GAEA.org. The number 4GAEA.org. On my website today, I'm going to have a post called Tax Questions Answered on the Elise Glenk Show. And we're going to post a summary of some of the more interesting questions that we're getting. And, of course, they're all really interesting, and they're interesting to whoever's asking them as well. And if you've got other comments, you can certainly leave them there as well. I'll try to make it live in the next break and put up the contact information as well. Our number again, 404-872-0750. It's 28 minutes past the hour. I'm Elise Glenk. It's our tax show on News Talk WSB.
Every Sunday, Elise Glenk is live and new to guide you through your money and real estate questions only on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Glenk Tax Show. It's 6 weeks to the end of the year, just about, and we have in the studio with us Mary Brody and Bill Nemeth. They're enrolled agents, members of the Georgia Association of Enrolled Agents, licensed to represent taxpayers before the IRS, and we are taking your tax questions today. It's time to start thinking about all this, folks. 404-872-0750. The year is nearly ending, and it's hard to believe that Thanksgiving is just 10 days away. Next Sunday, I will be giving you my famous Thanksgiving turkey recipe. Some things just never change. Bill and Mary, let's continue on with calls. Ashley joins us on the line from Decatur. Hi, Ashley. What's your tax question?
Hi, Elise. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I completed an IRA rollover last year from two previous employers into a Roth IRA, and I understand that I can claim half of that sum on each of the next 2 years' returns. I went back to school this year full-time, so this year my AGI will be lower than it will be for a long time, and I wondered if I can just claim 100% of that on this year's return.
Good question.
Great question. The answer is yes. The IRS does give you that flexibility, and you'll end up playing with your 8606, and it's page 2. That's where you specify the amount of tax you want to pay this year on your Roth conversions.
Okay, and I can do any percentage of that total amount.
Pretty much. The 8606 page 2, although complex, will lead you through it pretty easily.
Okay.
That actually works out pretty well for you, Ashley. I mean, did you have any income to declare this year?
I'll have a little bit, just part-time jobs, but it worked out just right.
Good for you.
Well, we're glad it's working out for somebody. And that somebody is you, Ashley. Thank you so much for your call. Have a happy Thanksgiving. Amanda joins us on the line. The lines are open, folks, if you've got tax questions. 404-872-0750. Amanda from Alpharetta, welcome to the Elise Glenk Show.
Good morning or good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call.
Good afternoon. How can we help today?
Well, my question is a little tricky in the sense that I'm a salaried employee and I work for a nonprofit broadcasting agency. And so for the most part, I'm able to turn in personal expenses that I incurred while on the job. But one of the tricky lines is personal expenses in order to get gussied up for on-air broadcasting. And one of the things that I take care of is that I cannot do my own stinking hair. It looks terrible when I do it myself, and I let a professional take care of it. But I've been doing the research online, and I've read about one particular broadcaster who tried to deduct these things on her tax report, and she got audited and busted for it. So I wanted some advice as to what I should do, because this is an expense that I had to do for on-air usage. But if my broadcasting company doesn't pick up the bill, how should I deduct it on the tax bill?
That's such a great question. And as a former television reporter, I am so looking forward to hearing your answer, Bill and Mary.
I should have been the one representing you at audit.
You should.
Because I think I can vigorously defend that that's an ordinary and necessary expense, and those are the words the IRS looks for. If, in fact, it relates to your job performance and you're not capable of meeting the appearance qualifications you would like to set for yourself, I view that ordinary and necessary.
Have you had that experience, Bill? Have you actually defended this? Because we agreed with our accountant at the time that makeup purchase specifically for air was deductible. Hair expenses were not. But then again, I was doing my hair sort of regularly. And when we hired an outside contractor to do makeup, we could write it off because it was for that kind of an expense. Have you had this experience?
We have it a number of times with actors and so on, where we actually get into some of the makeup requirements. And in fact, one of my tax clients is a professional makeup artist for one of the major TV shows. So I have seen the tax implications on both sides.
So Amanda, where should Amanda put this on her IRS tax form?
She is a W-2 employee is what I'm hearing. So that would go on her Schedule A itemized deductions, and it will be in the non-reimbursed business expense format. And it's subject to a 2% floor of her total income, her AGI. So let's think big and say she makes 100 grand a year on her W-2. Then anything over $2,000 would benefit her on her Schedule A.
So, Amanda, how much money do you spend on this every year?
For the most part, I try and keep my costs down. But hair would be once a week for about $60. Makeup, thankfully, I own it, and I'm able to apply it myself, so that's not a cost that I have to incur very often. I'm able to write off the mileage, the gasoline. Because I'm taking mileage, I don't take gasoline, and I did spend about $500 on wardrobe just for television. So I'm curious to know where the fine line is, where the IRS would say, sorry, this is part of your job, or they go, okay, we understand that's above and beyond what you would do for an everyday expense.
Well, it sounds like, Bill, she would also have some deductions with the wardrobe.
Yes, obviously. Just like a pilot or a stewardess has a uniform expense that they're allowed to deduct, and the cleaning expenses on such a thing.
So, Amanda, it sounds like Bill, at least Bill and Mary, think that you've got a case.
Excellent. So let me just double-check. That's a Schedule A non-reimbursed form that I'm filling it out.
Yes, ma'am. Are you a homeowner?
I'm not. I'm a renter.
Our whole conversation may have been academic because if your marital status is single or married, your standard deduction is going to far exceed any benefit that we've just talked about.
Okay, but that's okay because in the future, you know, right now I rent, but in the future I am looking to buy. So this has at least been good.
Yeah, you're practicing.
In the future.
Right. All right, Amanda, thank you so much for your call and best of luck with your career. 42 minutes past the hour. Dana joins us on the line from Atlanta. Hey, Dana, what's your tax question?
Good morning, and thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is, I recently short sale on my home, and the financial institution that I use is a credit union. They said they don't have a lot of experience with short sales. The difference in the losses was a $14,000 loss. They said that they are going to send a 1099 form to the IRS, and they are thinking that I have to claim that as income. And I had read somewhere, and I think I've even heard on the Susie Orman show, that this year you do not have to claim that loss on that as income on a short sale. Is that correct?
Well, it's even better than that. It's my understanding is that goes through 2013, that the losses on short sales and foreclosures are not, the IRS is not treating that as income. But let's see what our tax experts have to say.
Elise, you've quoted it exactly right. If it is the taxpayer's primary residence, all the way through 2013, they have relaxed the rules on that cancellation of debt when you do a short sale on your personal home.
But they will send, it is right to send the 1099. It's just that the IRS, I mean, we have to keep records, but the IRS is not going to treat that as income.
That is
correct. Okay, so I don't need to do anything special, just...
No, you'll include,
I wouldn't go that far.
Yeah, there's a little bit more to it. You don't have to worry about paying tax on $14,000 of phantom income. So that's one thing you don't have to worry about. Mary, what are the documentation requirements?
Well, the fact that you're going to get that 1099-C means that the IRS is going to be looking to your tax return.
Right.
And that 1099-C could come as a cancellation of credit card debt as opposed to a short sale situation. So you have to tell the IRS, I got this 1099-C, and I'm eligible to avoid tax on this money because it was my primary residence, and the form you use is a 982. So you do have to report it. Yeah, 982.
Okay.
You report it, but there won't be any tax consequence.
Okay, thank you so much.
You're welcome, and it's a hard loss. Have you recovered from your short sale? Have you moved on?
Yes, I actually am going to rent. That is my plan, like so many others, for a few years. And actually, I didn't just walk away from the home. I was on the market for 2 years. I tried to sell it. Unfortunately, it was a condo. I had two buyers, and the bank would not loan money in my subdivision because the HOAs were behind. So the loss was actually at $24,000, but I'm going to pay the rest of it over 5 years. So I did try to hold up my end of it.
That's really admirable, Dana, and it's unfortunate that... And this is where a lot of people get caught up, is that they find buyers, but for a whole bunch of reasons, they can't get the financing. And
right.
It's been one of the huge problems with the foreclosure crisis. It's kind of I think it's sort of the quieter side of the foreclosure crisis, is that people like you are actually trying to get things done, have buyers, and then the buyers just can't get any help from the banks.
Right.
It's a problem. Well,
yes.
Thank
you so much for answering my question. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Go and enjoy a really good night of sleep tonight. You've earned it. 45 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. Carl joins us on the line from Suwannee. Hi, Carl.
Hi, Elise.
What's your question?
Pretty fundamental question. I have a 25-year-old medical student's daughter in college. Is there any condition under which she would not have to file a tax return? She has some income in terms of stock trades from money she inherited through her grandparents. I just had a CPA tell me if she doesn't earn so much money or enough money, it's not necessary to file. I'm not sure that's the case.
Well, he's right in the sense of earned income. If she didn't earn very much money or any, that's true. But when you have stock sales and if they're reported in her social, she will definitely need to file a tax return. And although you may be able to still claim her as a dependent, given a lot of other situation, you know, circumstances, if you claim her as a dependent, she can still file her own tax return and claim the standard deduction. But those stock sales are going to have to be reported, and if they get reported to her under her social, she'll have to file a tax return.
Very good. That answers that. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for calling. It's 47 minutes past the hour. Elizabeth joins us on the line. Elizabeth, welcome to the Tax Show. What's your tax question?
Thank you. I actually, when I made my phone call, I hadn't heard Dana yet, but Dana seemed to touch on the topic that I'm dealing with. My house is on the market for a short sale, but the prospects are not looking good.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you can only stay a certain number of months in deficiency before the lender says that going to put it into foreclosure. So that's the situation that I'm looking at now, is that it could actually be a full foreclosure. I haven't been able to pay my property taxes, which the late fee is due this coming Tuesday. It's 30 days past due already. So I know that there's the Mortgage Forgiveness Act, which is what I think you were talking about, that runs through 2013.
Right.
And I know that your expert said that it does... It does cover short sales, but does it cover foreclosures as well?
It does, as it happens. Bill and Mary, do you want to fill in the rules?
Basically, it is to give tax relief to people that are facing very hard times, losing their house and so on. So not only does it apply to short sales, but it applies to the 1099A, what they call abandonment. You obviously aren't abandoning it, but if they're going to foreclose on you, it's, as I jokingly say, they held closing but did not invite you.
Right. Okay. Because I wasn't. I know after 90 days of it being on the market, they told me I could apply for a deed in lieu, but I wasn't really sure what the difference was going to be with a deed in lieu and foreclosure as far as, the tax implications.
There's no difference really for the tax implications. I think a foreclosure may cost you more down the line because there are more fees that are attached to a foreclosure. But for your credit, deed in lieu is so much better.
So much better.
It is better. It's significantly better. Anytime, if it means that you can buy and get another mortgage in 4 years instead of 5 years, or 3 years instead of 5 years, you want to do what you can to get a deed in lieu. It also helps you start the process sooner.
Gotcha. But that's if they do accept the deed in lieu. I was told I have to apply for that all over again. I've applied for HAMP so that I can get through a half a program. And they're reviewing that now, but they give you only a certain number of days for your house to sell.
I know. It doesn't work. I know. It doesn't work in places like Las Vegas and Miami and Phoenix and Atlanta and the entire state of Michigan. It just doesn't work. And it's very unfortunate. It sounds like you'll probably get caught in that. You can check on where you are with the HAMP. You can see if you want to file for a deed in lieu. You can talk to your lender before you do any official filing. But, from tax implications, I do think that a deed in lieu would probably be better for you than a foreclosure. But either way, you're not going to pay the tax on that phantom income, and you have all the way until 2013, and we're not even into 2012. So I think you're going to be okay. But let me know, okay, Elizabeth? Call us back and let us know. It's 50 before the hour. We have news, weather, and traffic coming up. In today's Atlanta Journal-Constitution, there's a report that looks at the millions of dollars Georgia public colleges spend each year teaching skills students should have learned in high school. It's 10 before the hour on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM, News Talk WSB.
Expert advice you can depend on. Weekdays with Clark Howard and Dave Ramsey. And midday every Sunday with Elise Glink on AM 750. And now, 95.5 FM, News Talk WSB.
Hey, it's the Elise Glink Tax Show. And so glad that we're able to get in some of your tax questions today with our experts, Mary Brody and Bill Nemeth. They are enrolled agents and they are here to help. Ken joins us on the line from Roswell. Ken, what's your tax question?
Yes, my oldest daughter, who's 24, is still living at home. She has a job, and I was just wanting to make sure that I could actually deduct her as a dependent on this 2011 tax return.
Okay, guys, what do you think?
Well, it turns out it becomes very easy up to age 23. It's almost automatic that you can take the child as a dependent. The year they turn 24, it's no longer an automatic, and then we have to ask the question, how much did she earn? If it's over about $3,700, you will lose the ability to claim her as a dependent.
Okay, well, she's 24, and she definitely made more than that, so I guess that answers the question very easily. Yeah.
I'd like to follow up with, if she is in school and she's paying tuition and books, she would qualify for the American Opportunity Credit, and, in fact, would probably have no tax liability and would get a refund because part of the AOC is refundable.
Is she in school?
No, she finished her master's and is now a teacher and is living at home and saving money until she moves out next June.
So, I think she's going to be stuck paying her own taxes this year. But on the other side, she will qualify for the standard deduction and head of house. Would she head a household also? I think so.
Not unless she had a qualifying dependent.
So she
will be single.
So she'll be single. Standard.
Get a personal exemption and a standard deduction.
So that'll help her. I mean, if you look at the total tax paid, she's probably going to pay less, or the two of you together would pay less than if you took her as a dependent.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome. I'm sorry we don't have a better answer for you. Let's see if we can get one last quick question in before we end the hour. Matt joins us on the line from Buford. What is your question? We have about a minute, Matt.
Yes, ma'am. It's a pleasure speaking with you guys. I'm an independent contractor, and I work in the antique moving services or whatever. And I was wondering, would it be beneficial for me to go ahead and file for a tax ID, a business license, in order to increase my deductions? Would that benefit me at all?
So, in other words, should you become an LLC because in some way, somehow you think that's going to benefit you tax-wise? Guys, what do you think?
Well, I would say that an LLC for a single sole proprietor is probably only going to provide you legal protection, because otherwise you'd have to declare yourself as a corporation, be taxed as a corporation to get any further tax benefit. You'd be a Schedule C sole proprietor whether you're an LLC or not. And I would definitely not file for a federal ID number unless you have employees or become an LLC.
Okay.
So that sort of that makes it pretty clear cut. There isn't any other kind of tax benefit. We should talk a little bit more about that because I think people are very confused, and we often get those questions. Should I file for an LLC? As if somehow the LLC is going to protect you or give you deductions or special benefits or maybe confer like a magic wand of business development.
Right.
Who knows?
Right.
58 minutes past the hour. It's the Elyse Kling Tax Show, 404-872-0750. We'll be right back with more on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkblink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
6 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. I'm Elyse Glink. We're doing our annual tax show. As we get close to the end of the year, it's 6 weeks to go until the end of the year. That means we're going to start thinking about how we handle all these things at the end of the year. And we've brought into the studio our two of our favorite tax experts, Mary Brody and Bill Nemeth. They are both enrolled agents, licensed to represent taxpayers before the IRS. Mary also owns and runs a couple of Jackson Hewitts in the Atlanta area. Bill, are you the current president of the Georgia Association of Enrolled Agents?
Yes, ma'am. Current president for the next 8 months.
Terrific. And you can find an enrolled agent at their website, 4GAEA, the number 4GAEA.org. I have just posted on the thinklink.com blog some notes already from today's show, plus Bill and Mary's contact information. So there are phone numbers there for them as well. And if you've got additional questions, you can leave them in a comment on the page. And I'm sure that Bill will be trolling, as he always does, trying to help you out. 404-872-0750. We have a full slate of calls, so let's get going. It's 8 minutes past the hour. Charles joins us on the line from Atlanta. Hey, Charles, welcome to the Elyse Kling Tax Show.
Hey, thank you.
Sure, what's your question?
I have three jobs that I received 1099s on, around $50,000 or $60,000 a year, and I'm just trying to figure out what all I can write off. If it's better to do gas or mileage, just to keep from getting beat up so bad because the amount I have to pay at the end of the year.
Great question. So, what are the different tax deductions that a self-employed person like Charles can take?
I'd like to address some of those because I do a lot of self-employed folks. His first question about how do I get the best benefit from my mileage that I have to drive for business. The first thing you might want to look at is, have you claimed this vehicle in prior years as either actual expenses or as standard mileage? The IRS rules are you've got to pick a way and then stay with that way until you dispose of the vehicle. So if in the past you've been doing standard mileage, you're probably better off with standard mileage. Quick rule of thumb, if it's a relatively new car, you're absolutely better off with standard mileage because it's costing you about 15 cents a mile to drive. The IRS right now is giving you an allowance of 55.5 cents a mile for the last half of 2011.
Did they change it because the gas prices went up again?
Yep. About June, they said they weren't going to change it. And in early July, they said it's going from 51 cents a mile for the first 6 months to 55.5 for the last 6 months.
Well, that's a true bargain since the price of gas has actually dropped back down again.
Yeah, and the good news, historically, they have never reduced it again. So they did this in 2005, 2008, and now 2011, that at the mid-year, they bumped it up.
What are some other deductions that Charles might want to take?
Certainly, if he qualifies for an office and home, he may want to look carefully at having a space or a room set aside that he uses solely for business. He then could deduct any expense associated with that, including his utilities, his rent, or part of his home mortgage interest and property taxes, things of that nature. Presumably, he has to have a connection to the internet for what he does. That would probably be like 90% deductible for business. And if he had to buy anything relative to his business, like perhaps a computer, perhaps a cell phone to stay in contact with his clients and so on.
Okay, so it sounds like there's a lot. I believe there's a place online on the IRS website. Do you remember the form? There is a form that looks at the different deductions. I'm trying to find it.
Oh, well, Schedule C is a pretty good place to start. And the other expenses on page 2, that can be as wide as your imagination.
Oh, okay, Charles.
Frequently is.
Infrequently, I'm sure it is. Charles, thank you so much for your call. I hope that helps. 404-872-0750. Alan joins us on the line from Canton. Alan, what's your tax question?
I'm calling for advice on filing my late 2010 taxes.
Okay. Why are they late?
And part is negligence, and everybody in my office said they were going to file for an extension to do them in October, and I did too, but I had a baby 4 months ago and have not gotten a chance to actually follow up with that and get them filed.
Okay. So you were exhausted and had baby brain. And now you want to get caught up. I think it's a great idea. All of us have been there. All of us understand. Bill and Mary, what should Alan do first?
Okay. If he has a refund, he can stop losing sleep because, in fact, nothing bad will happen. If you file late and you have a refund, either at the federal or the Georgia level, they're very happy to get the return. If he has a balance due, he is going to get hit with some pretty stiff penalties. Basically, a 25% failure to file penalty, both at the federal level and at the Georgia level.
Ooh, but there's good news on the horizon. I thought I heard him say he had a baby 4 months ago.
Yeah,
well, that's an automatic $1,000 tax credit. Never mind some of the special deductions you can get for daycare having a baby is great for your taxes.
Well, good.
If not, for your sleep.
That's right. I would recommend you get it done, though, pretty quick, as soon as you can.
Here's the question, Alan. Do you think you actually have a refund coming to you? I mean, where do you think you are?
I've always had a refund in prior years. So.
Okay. Well, if you've always had a refund, then what you need to do is, do you generally file these taxes yourself or you hire somebody?
I usually file them myself using some tax software.
Okay. I don't know that you can still file online with the free file for 2010. Candy Bill and Mary, I think they shut...
No.
They shut down
electronic filing as of October 17th. So he may be able to do his return himself, print it out, put on his W-2s, and mail it to the IRS and to Georgia.
You might want to try that, Alan, if there's some tax software that you bought and you have lying around. You may also want to have just somebody take a little second look. If you're really that short of time, and sort of time is of the essence, you may want to have somebody like Bill or Mary or some other tax preparer just sort of, even if you do it yourself, have them run through it. It just might happen faster for you, and then you won't find yourself suddenly in 2012 going, you know, I really never got around to that. The baby got sick, and I forgot again, and this way you know it's done.
Okay. Thank you very much for the advice.
All right. You're welcome, Alan. Good luck. Oh, a new baby. I remember how tired I was. Honestly, there were weeks where it was like, oh, did we go to the grocery store? Who could remember 2 minutes earlier? 404-872-0750. Darlene joins us on the line from Atlanta. Hi, Darlene.
Hey, how you doing, you guys?
Good. What's on your mind today?
I'm afraid I'm another parent with an old child.
Okay.
My daughter turned 24 last Wednesday, and she graduated from college in June. So will I not be able to claim her as a dependent this year?
Well, the rule is if a child is under the age of 24, it's not a question. You can absolutely claim her. But the year she turns 24, you then have to look at how much income did she have? And if she had income of any nature, whether it was interest or dividends or earned income.
She's been working a couple of months. What was that income cut off, you said? Was it $37,000 or $3,700?
$3,700.
Okay.
Yeah, it's the personal exemption. So if you look at any particular year, it's the amount of the personal exemption.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So if she earned that much, but if you're just under and she lived with you, then you could claim her as a dependent.
I will look. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thanks for calling the show. 15 minutes past the hour, our number 404-872-0750 is, I'm sure it's become quite apparent, we're talking tax today and happy to answer your tax questions. John joins us on the line. John, welcome to the tax show.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure. What's your tax question for Bill and Mary?
Well, actually, it's more of a two-faceted question, if that's possible. One is, I am active duty military, and I contribute to my first savings plan. I am scheduled to be discharged in February for a disability, and wanted to know what the tax implications would be for rolling my thrift savings plan into a Roth IRA, so to speak, and if I should do that sooner rather than later.
Well, why would you want to do that? What do you think the benefit is to you?
Well, once I'm no longer on active duty, I'm no longer able to contribute funds to the thrift savings plan.
Right.
They would just be sitting there, and I didn't know if it would be better to just begin my Roth IRA, which is what I want to do regardless, or should I just leave that money, let it grow, let it do its thing, and just start from scratch?
Well, you have other options. So first option is you can roll the thrift into just a regular IRA. You'd have to do that anyway. I don't think you can just convert it straight from the thrift into a Roth IRA. It has to go to the IRA, and then it gets converted back. But that doesn't mean, I don't know how much you earn from the military, but there's a long way to go before you would be disqualified for just contributing to a Roth IRA. So at this point, Bill and Mary, you want to pick this up?
I think you've captured the essence of it, at least. The real question is, if you flip it over into the Roth, you're going to pay tax on the full amount. And, you know, the Roth has a number of benefits, but depending upon John's age, if he's middle age or less, it may not be the right thing to do right now.
All right, so John, how old are you?
30 years old.
You're 30?
Yes.
And how much money are we talking about?
It's just right around $4,000. I only started contributing this year.
Okay. So it's not a huge amount of money, and you could roll it in and then roll it over to a Roth IRA, but the thrift savings plan tends to do pretty well for most people, and if you just leave that money there, you know, it's a government plan, it's probably going to be just growing along, steamrolling. Did you earn less than, what is it this year, Bill? Is it $107,000?
Just around that, yeah.
Right. So if you earn less than $107,000, you can still contribute up to $5,000 to a Roth IRA this year.
Right, right. Yeah, I did see that. But in researching several Roths, some of them have a minimum requirement of, you know, they vary $1,500, $2,500. But then I guess I saw where some of those, that fee is negated if you sign up for automatic contributions
through your
bank account. So I just wasn't sure if, you know, my money would be better off sitting in there and growing since it's such a small amount, or if I could use that to meet the minimum requirements to open up one of these.
You don't want to pay, you don't want your $4,000 to turn into a $2,000 Roth IRA contribution. You could just slice off about half of that to taxes and a penalty and who knows what. So I think that's not a good use of your money. I think Do you know what you're going to be doing as of February? I guess you're getting money until then. Are you getting disability after that? Do you have a job lined up?
I'll be getting disability as well as I'll be a full-time college student. I've already pre-enrolled for that. The one thing also, I guess, on top of that is, it was kind of a big year. Not only am I getting out on disability, but I purchased a house and I'm having a baby.
Wow.
You know, like, yeah, it's getting pretty wild. And my wife and I just got married the previous October, and at this point we still have not filed jointly, and I didn't know with the purchase of the house and the new baby for this year, if it would be smarter for us to file married filing separately or jointly. I don't know what the...
Well, talk about burying the lead, huh?
I tell you what.
Okay, so this must have been the second part of the two-part question.
It is.
And Bill, Bill and Mary, I'm going
to
put you on hold, John. Bill and Mary, do you have a quick answer for John on this?
Well, I couldn't think of a more perfect tax planning opportunity than John's situation. You've got so much going on there, and the whole idea about your filing status is you're pretty limited in some ways on what you can, how you can file when you get married. And the best way is married filing joint. The absolute worst bracket in the entire tax code is married filing separate. And once you get married, you only have those two choices. So I would suggest that you sit down, pay for an hour of somebody's time, and get some tax planning, because just getting back to that Roth question, you choose a year where you don't have as much income to actually convert money from an IRA to a Roth. So you've got a lot of things going on, and married filing joint income might preclude you from doing that altogether.
And this is not the year that you want to mess with that. So John, time to find yourself some tax help. And if you want, the number 4, GAEA.org, the Georgia Association of Enrolled Agents. All right, 21 minutes past the hour. We have a prize pack to give away. We'll do that when we come back, so stay tuned. And we have more tax talk on News Talk WSB.
Every Sunday, Elise Glink is live and new to guide you through your money and real estate questions. Only on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
26 minutes past the hour on the Elise Glink Tax Show. 404-872-0750. We've got a prize pack to give away. The value, $339. It includes a maintenance agreement for your home's HVAC, courtesy of Shoemate Air Conditioning and Heating, an Autobell Car Wash, $25 gift card, a Lakewood 400 Antique Market, $25 gift certificate, and a pair of Win It Before You Buy It tickets to see Roger Waters' The Wall on June 13th at Phillips Arena, produced by Live Nation. We're going to give it away to the fifth caller at our prize pack line, 404-741-0750. Be nice to Fred. He's the one taking your call. Good luck. 27 minutes past the hour. Luke has a very quick question. Luke, what's your question?
Hey, Elise, how are you today?
We're doing fine, thank you. What's your tax question?
My tax question is this: is I hired an accountant back at the beginning of the, I guess, the 2011 year to do my taxes for me. I had to get some information together, some write-offs. We filed an extension before the April 15th due date, and I started calling her back. I lost touch middle of the summer. Started calling back, I guess, August, saying, you know, I need to get my taxes filed. Wouldn't return my phone calls, wouldn't get back to me. A week ago, finally sent me my taxes on the return, and it's missing about $20,000 worth of income on the return. She's lost write-offs.
So she's just totally, she's totally messed up, is what you're trying to tell us.
Pretty much, yeah.
All right.
Dropped the ball all over the place.
All right, Bill and Mary, what do you do when your accountant or your tax preparer totally messes up?
Well, obviously, you need to get your paperwork to a professional. I would call her conduct very unprofessional, and get it to a professional, have it done, get it submitted as soon as you can. And if you owe taxes and there's a penalty, you could actually try and request an abatement of that penalty, get out of paying a penalty because of the conduct of that prior accountant. If they are a licensed professional, you can turn them into their licensing board. But other than that, I guess you could turn them into the IRS, eh, Bill?
You could try.
Okay.
Perfect. Bill and Mary, thank you. Luke, I hope that helps. It is a lot more work for you, but at least there is some place for recourse. We are at 29 minutes past the hour. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with another half hour of tax questions answered here on News Talk WSB.
Get drunk into your... expert money advice you can depend on. Weekdays with Clark Howard and Dave Ramsey. And midday every Sunday with Elise Glink on AM 750. And now, 95.5 FM. News Talk WSB.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Glink Tax Show. We have our tax experts with us today, Mary Brody and Bill Nemeth. They are enrolled agents. They specialize and represent taxpayers before the IRS. They are friends of the show, and I have posted online their contact information as well as their sort of a summary from the Georgia Association of Enrolled Agents website, where you can find an enrolled agent, a little bit about what an enrolled agent is and some of today's earlier questions from last hour. There have been just some terrific questions. We have a whole bunch of people holding, so let's get right at it. Herb joins us on the line from Jonesboro. Hey, Herb, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Elise. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure. What's on your mind today?
Well, I'll try to make this short, but it could get long and complicated. I did a thing for a friend who is over 85. He's currently legally blind and almost legally deaf, if there were such a thing. He received a notice on his 2009 return that he owed over $20,000 because of some capital transactions that took place through his broker. I think what happened when he filed his return, he just sent a copy of the 1099 rather than filling in all the work, because the way their form, let's see, it's CP2000, there's an AUR control number with it. I guess my base question is, should we ever hear back from the IRS that they have accepted our statement of that we disagree with what the IRS said? Because this was happened in July. We've been sitting on it now for 3 or 4 months and haven't gotten anything back.
What did you send them? You got a letter and then you sent a letter back?
I faxed them what I did. This is 2009. I did this gentleman's taxes for 2010 using a computer package. In anticipation of that, I went back and used more or less the same type of package for 2009, so that the return I was working off for 2009 agreed with what he filed. And it did almost exactly.
Uh-huh.
The Schedule D shows that he lost on the order of $44,000 from transactions that his broker did to liquidate a lot of holdings that he had. So he had a capital loss carryover and all that goes with those capital losses. What the IRS said is that he just had the amount he realized as income. So they want to tax what he realized as income. Now, what I faxed them was, when I redid the package, I faxed them a copy of the Schedule D that the package produced, and it agreed agreed exactly with what he had filed when he just said, see the attached list.
Okay, so you didn't actually refile a tax return with the IRS. Bill and Mary, let's jump in and try and figure out where things are.
Okay, it sounds like he did everything well up to the point of faxing. It's been my experience, if you fax it to the IRS, sometimes it never gets received by them. First thing I would do is call up and find out if they have receipt of a fax. And a lot of times they say, what fax? And so you put together your compelling evidence and you mail it to them. And that will then delay any bad things from happening. The other thing I'd like to comment on, if in fact when you took a look at his 09 taxes, he actually had a capital loss, he probably should have received a refund then, because his taxable income would have gone down perhaps by $3,000. And in fact, if you submitted an amended return marked CP2000 reference, frequently they will send you a refund with the letter.
Yeah, well, because the file... what he filed realized the $3,000 loss.
Okay.
And I have been back in touch with them a couple of times. Because I had to file a power of attorney and the other side there that said that I was authorized to work in his place, I'm not a CPA. I'm just a guy who's doing something for a friend. But they have told me, the people I've talked with have told me, say, okay, we have your name and address associated with a file in their computer records. I'm talking to an IRS agent. He's looking at his terminal, says, yeah, we've got all the information. We've got your name on it. So I feel like they've got that they've received everything.
Okay.
And the last time I contacted them, the woman that I talked to said, well, send me the things, and I'll act out it next few days and get back with you. Well, I faxed her, and I never received any more information. Now, I know that faxes can get lost. They cannot feed through the machine right and whatnot, but I feel quite confident that they received everything that we submitted. It's just a matter of never, and if they accepted what we said, should we receive notice from them, yeah, what you filed is okay, ignore the delinquency notice.
Well, one of the things that you should get is some sort of something in writing from them that says, yes, we've gotten all your information, you don't owe any back taxes, thank you very much. But that may take up to 6 months to get.
Okay.
The timing on that can be very long. But here's one thing you might want to consider. That CP2000 that your friend got is now of record, and Georgia is going to go up to the IRS, pull down those records, not really see anything that the IRS has done on its end, and Georgia's going to send your friend a bill, too.
Right.
And so I would highly recommend being ready for that, because that will come probably within this next year.
Okay. What I kind of was wondering was about going in to talk with an IRS agent in the Atlanta area, just saying, here's the paperwork, here's what it is. Is that an advisable thing I should do? And is there some place I could take everything?
It turns out you mentioned the word CP2000 and AUR. That's Automated Under Reporter Unit. You're talking to a computer.
Right, I understand.
And for that reason, the people at any service center would be extremely sympathetic, but I don't think they can get any more information than you can by calling an assister.
Mm-hmm.
So the answer on that is, yeah, you could take it in, but it might not do you any good. And there are several service centers around town. There's one in Chamblee right off of I-85 and Chamblee-Tucker Road that is very, very good, and I know there's one in Marietta, too. So, yeah, you can get to them.
So there's what you're basically saying, guys, is he needs to wait some more time? Is that what I'm hearing?
Sounds like he's done everything he's supposed to, and occasionally I've been getting letters that says, we've received your response and we'll get back to you in 60 days. And we're getting a lot of those because the computer is just generating them by the tons.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right, Herb, so if you don't hear anything...
I just need to be more patient, what you're saying.
Yeah.
And if you're not...
I'll call you on the next tax question.
Yeah, right. The next tax show will be the end of the year, and you can call us and let us know if you heard anything.
I might do that.
All right. Thanks for calling.
Thank you very much for your time.
Okay, Herb. 44 minutes past the hour. News Talk WSB, 404-872-0750. Andy joins us on the line. Andy, what's your tax question?
Hi. Thanks for your service.
Sure.
I have income from a disability insurance policy, and I am on long-term disability from a company also receiving Social Security. My income this past year will have been about $33,000, and then I'll have $10,000 in capital gains. About $10,000 of the income is actually just from the insurance policy, and I'm going to have about $22,000 in medical expenses from preparing for shoulder surgery and having a van converted, my home having a roll-in shower built, and then getting a power wheelchair. I'm wondering, how do I determine how much I can write off my taxes and how much I can pass forward, and is my medical insurance income considered earned income?
Okay, let's take the questions in order. Basically, on your medical expenses, it sounds like everything would be qualifying medical expense. There is the caveat that they have to be paid in the year you deduct them. So you had substantial medical expenses and modifying your home and so on, which would all be acceptable. If you had actually written checks for the $22,000, that then would be something that would be appearing on your Schedule A. You mentioned that you had your home modified, so I presume you're a homeowner.
Yeah.
And then would be able to itemize on Schedule A. So that part of it you're okay on. Keep good documentation. I have done audits where people have had the best of intentions, but they didn't hang on to their receipts, and so it was very difficult to prove what the expenses were for, and that's what the IRS will require.
Yes, and I have meticulous documentation. I guess the bottom line question is, if my income is only, after my AGI is only about 14 to 18 thousand, how much? And I'm only paying out of pocket, say, $2,000 in taxes. Do I receive a refund in excess of that, or how are those medical expenses paid back to me?
Okay. It turns out your standard deduction, whether you're single or married, is going to contrast against your itemized deductions. If you have a relatively modest AGI, you may not owe any taxes without even itemizing. So it all depends on the particular case. We'd have to look at it to see where your income is. If you just took the standard deduction, where would you be? The way the tax code is written, if you have more deductions than you have taxable income, it is not generate a refund for you. That would be called a non-refundable credit kind of thing. So you'd get no benefit from that. And the other thing I'd like to address on your disability insurance, the way that works, if you paid for the disability insurance while you were working, the income is tax-free. If your employer paid for that disability insurance, it's taxable. That's the general rule.
Well, that is finally the answer I needed to get, because I've been trying to figure that out. They did pay for the disability insurance. It was part of the benefit of working there, so... that I can count that as at least taxable income.
Yes, sir. You'll see it as taxable.
And one thing you might want to look at is you could potentially qualify for the zero capital gains rates on your $10,000 of capital gains because your income level is lower.
That's what I was hoping for, too. I decided to sell some stock that was up this year in anticipation of hopefully washing some of the expenses across from the capital gains.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like you maybe made some smart moves, even though it sounds health-wise like a very tough year for you, and I hope you're feeling better. I hope 2012 is a better year for you.
Oh, I am, and thanks so much. You answered my question very well.
Great. We're so glad we could help. Take care. Thank you so much for calling. It's 49 minutes past the hour. Don't forget to check out today's Atlanta Journal-Constitution for a very special report on Georgia public colleges and the millions of dollars they spend teaching our students what they should have learned in high school. Also, Sean Hannity is coming back to Atlanta and joining Neil for his holiday concert, Salute to the Troops, Sunday, December 18th at the Cobb Energy Sale. Tickets are on sale now. Go to WSBRadio.com. Come, sponsored exclusively by Jim Ellis Buick GMC, and a portion of the proceeds will benefit the Freedom Alliance Scholarship Fund. Don't delay. Get your tickets now, WSBRadio.com. I'm Elise Glink. Stay tuned. We'll be back with Bill and Mary and Tax Talk next on News Talk WSB.
Let me tell you how it will be.
Expert advice anytime at faithglink.com and find her live. Midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
55 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. It's our tax show with Mary Brody and Bill Nemeth. They're enrolled agents. Harold joins us on the line. Harold, welcome to our tax show.
Carl, I enjoy your program. Listen to you every week.
Thank you. Happy to have you on board today. What's your question?
Say a person was in prison for 22, 23 years and didn't,
wow,
file a tax, didn't file a tax return. What's
mm-hmm.
the liability?
Bill, Mary, somebody who I assume he didn't earn very much money or anything while he was in prison.
No.
Yeah, typically he would have no requirement to file because he didn't get up to that threshold of about $9,000 for any year, or $5,000 in Georgia. So if there's no earned income of any substance, there would be no requirement to file. The only thing we would caution you on is if the person had tax liabilities prior to the 23 years, Georgia has no statute. So when you next file, you may see some correspondence from Georgia if there was some bad history.
So, Harold, did you, when you were incarcerated or before you were incarcerated, had you always filed your tax returns?
Yes.
Okay. So you don't think you owe anything from, like, 23, not that you could remember 23 years ago, but you don't think you owe anything there?
No.
And do you have a job now and are earning income?
No, just earning Social Security.
Just Social Security. Okay. So, Bill, or Mary, what is the requirement for filing with Social Security?
Basically, if Social Security is his only income, he has no requirement to file.
Well, that's good to know.
That is good to know.
Okay. Thank you and enjoy it.
You're welcome, Harold. Thanks so much for listening to the show. That's interesting. I actually thought if you got Social Security, you would still have to file.
No, because Social Security is not taxable until you have other income of, for a single person, at least more than $25,000. And so if the Social Security is not going to be taxable, then it's no requirement to file.
That's kind of nice. What about on the state level? Same thing?
Yeah. Social Security is completely exempt from Georgia tax.
It's perfect. Well, we've come to the end of our tax show, Bill and Mary. It's been so fun, and we've had great questions this time. Maybe will you guys come back again before the end of the year?
Absolutely.
Sure will.
Well, let's tell everybody how to find you. So Mary Brody can be contacted at her office, 770-446-8545. And Bill Nemeth can be contacted on his cell phone. I'm always nervous to say that, Bill, but you tell me people are very respectful. So 770-616-1638. If you are looking for an enrolled agent, you can go to the number 4GAEA.org, the number 4 Georgia Association of Enrolled Agents. All of that information is up at the blog, thinkglink.com, thinkglink.com. Bill and Mary, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Our pleasure. Thank you.
All right. I hope everybody has a very tax-free or taxing-free weekend and a very profitable week going forward. We'll be back next week to get ready for Thanksgiving. I can't believe I'm saying that already. Have a great week, everybody. Okay.